You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, Donald Trump's at it again. I mean, we could start every podcast with Donald Trump's at it again. But this time, it's not the geopolitics that I want to talk about, although we will. It's the attack on the Fed and Jerome Powell, which is petty, which is dangerous, and the bond market doesn't like it. It's not going mad, but the bond market definitely doesn't like what's going on. The yields are ticking up, the bond prices themselves coming down, when it should be the other way around. Something's going on. People are saying we don't like this, and therefore we're getting rid of our bond holdings, or starting to.
I think he's pushing it too far this time, and I think there's going to be a backlash. We haven't had a chance to hear from business, but it's surprising that they're not saying something. This is dangerous. I mean, what was unique about it is that Powell's been pretty stoic up to now. He hasn't said a word. He just carried on. This is what I'm here to do. You know, I'm here to decide whether to put rates up or down or whatever it is. This time he came out punching. And he said, this is political. In other words, politics, you know, politics are steering the, Trump wants politics to steer the, Fed rate or the Fed decisions, not economics. So he's come out now quite aggressive. What's also interesting is that, the Senate committees, I don't know who the particular senator who's in charge of the election of appointment of new Fed governors, but he's come out, whether it's a banking committee or whatever, he's come out with Elizabeth Warren also saying, look, as long as this continues, we will not entertain the appointment of a new governor. And this could just put everything on hold. So it's quite an important it's quite an important issue. And the markets just seem to, market down slightly. This is what we're supposed to do, but it's, Lindsay, it's a very worrying sign. And
I think so.
I know we talk about Trump, but and there are times that I can tolerate him. There are other times where I say, okay, it's time for the lawmakers to take control. In other words, for the Senate, for Congress, and so on, just to cut him down. Now it's enough. You know, we don't want a country like, or you don't want to see America going this way. For me, it's very worrying, and I'm just hoping that they're big enough people there, in the U.S. to stand up to this and say, okay, enough's enough. You know, this is it. But I don't know. You know, everybody's scared of him. They tiptoe around him, which is also very, very
nervous. He's such an underwhelming person. I mean, in every way, physically, mentally, every way, he's loathsome. And I can't believe Peter Mandelson, I don't know if you followed the Mandelson story.
I know who Peter Mandelson is,
Oh, God, what he said on a BBC interview, he said, I like his humour and his graciousness, because he used to be the ambassador, Britain's ambassador in Washington. His graciousness, and he says he makes decisions based on, something horrible. It infuriated me. But I just don't understand why people.
He got into trouble, Mandelson, didn't he?
he's a rogue. He's finished now,
totally.
Though. Yeah, he was Epstein, one of Epstein's mates.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, yes, we were talking about Trump. No one's standing up to him.
But he's done this other thing now. He's coming out with this 10% charge. You can't charge more than that on credit cards. This is also a declaration. In other words, you know, he's trying to think of the midterms and to get the votes of anybody who's got a debt or a loan with a credit card company.
I see. Yes, so, he's starting his president for the people sort of campaign.
Yes,
is he?
Yes. You know, limiting the amount that you can charge on credit cards, because it does sometimes go, 20%, 30%, but he's limiting it to a certain amount. I don't know what the what the exact amount is, but
I think the Visa MasterCard business model probably works a little bit better than Trump's mind, don't you?
Well, of course. I mean, you can't decide that. I can understand money lenders, those chaps who lend money on the street corner, and what they charge. But I wouldn't put credit card companies into that category as well. They do well, but they provide an incredible service. You know, anywhere in the world, you want to use a Visa card, you can. A MasterCard, so whatever it is. But I agree with you. I think they know their business a little bit better than Mr. Trump.
Quite right. Talking about business, David, before we get onto geopolitics and other matters, a very interesting piece that I got from Annabel Bishop, the chief economist at Investec in Johannesburg, talking about global trade. And it's with a South African bias, but it says it gives global figures as well. And the headline is, or rather the first paragraph says the following: global trade has shown strong growth despite US tariffs and geopolitical tensions in general, resulting in changing trade patterns reaching over, what is this number here, 35 trillion, which is a record level. It's up 2.5% in compared with the previous 3 months. For July to September, global trade was up 2.5%. Okay, so it's a little bit behind, but only a quarter behind. Energy commodities continue to dominate global commodity trade. This is the one that really interests me. It says, the change in trade patterns, which has been a key driver of resilience, has included things I hadn't heard, actually: friendshoring, nearshoring, and onshoring. While the jump in global trade came from rising volumes in the main on stable global demand. So when they say friendshoring and nearshoring, I think it means people said, never mind the United States, let's look for markets elsewhere. Let's look for markets closer to us. So the Southern Hemisphere, for example, has got a south-south drive. So the Southern Hemisphere countries are trading with each other. And so what Trump has done is essentially is starting to make America an island. And other people are saying, well, if we can, we'll deal with other people. Thank you very much.
I think, well, they were forced into that, you know, because of the tariffs and, you know, focusing on local markets. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know enough. I can never challenge Annabella or even understand the global patterns, but I can imagine that countries like that have been forced into it. But you know what we don't understand is just how big the Asian economies are in terms of population, and you know, whether it's Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, you know, those countries, Korea's, so on, Japan. I mean, these are sizable economies. They might not be sizably rich, but they are developing. You know, when I say developing, I'm using the word much broadly, developing economies. So I can imagine that there's a lot of trade there. I don't know whether they're enemies. I know Japan's having a go at China and their issues there, but I don't think you can ignore them. I looked at India's GDP numbers, which were astounding. And, you know, around that, I thought, okay, well, let's look. The problem, Lindsay, it's not easy to find businesses. You know what I'm saying? It's not easy to find companies that can compare with the size of the American companies or the ones that we know, Europe, that we're familiar with.
So, and also, David, let's face it, you don't know the Indian market. You can say, well, look at all these, how many billion people there are, and look at the potential, should you get your company right or your product right. But you don't know. You have to be on the ground, or you have to have someone on the ground. Yeah. And you're an on-the-ground sort of person when it comes to America, because you're a regular visitor there. And although you're not going to see a director of Microsoft or Intel or whoever it is, or NVIDIA, you know the company and you feel comfortable with it. With India, I wouldn't know where to start.
No, it's exactly that. And when you look at it, it's made up of a number of small and medium cap companies, you know, many, many of them. And I don't know the areas. I don't know the relationships. There are a few that come through in the Nifty 50 or thereabouts, but they're not businesses that, you know, I can really say, oh, I've got to own this one or that one. If you want to, you might want to buy the index. But, you know, that's not – I like to get a feel for the economy. So even though we talk about Malaysia and talk about Indonesia and talk about these places where a lot of activity is taking place, it's very difficult to translate that into a handful of companies or businesses. And that's why we tend to go back to America. But it's, you know, hopefully it's happening. I think I'm having the same problem with South Africa at the moment as well. As you know, we're talking about South Africa doing better in the green shoots, and you mentioned it last week.
Yes.
But when I translate it into actual businesses and say, is there anything I can buy? And I go through the whole list, I still haven't got that confidence. The only one that, you know, that we might be seeing, might be looking into is with commodity prices starting to tick up. Do we find, you know, are BHP cheap? Is it cheap? Is Anglo's okay? You know, they're doing the deal with Teck, and now we've got the Glencore Rio
business. Is it a copper company now? Have you looked at the commodity spread now? Has it become a copper company?
Well, they're trying to get dominance in copper.
Yeah. Mm.
And there's a lot of talk up of copper. I'm not in the market. You know, I'm not a consumer. So
it's at record highs. That's not bad.
That's what I'm saying. It's 30. But people are accumulating the metal. So they must have something to do with it, or they do believe that there's going to be a demand for it, whether it's for electricity, you know, power transmission, or whether it's for, you know, home building, whatever it is. Mm. But a lot of copper has gone into the U.S. But, you know, and companies are starting to pick up slightly. You're seeing more activity. This Rio deal is very interesting with Glencore. I get it to be worth about two, looking both market caps, it's a $200 billion deal.
Not bad. But,
yeah, no, it's big. But I don't know if it's going to take off. Simply because you've got two very dominant CEOs. Who's going to stand by? You know, and who's going to let? Is this going to be joint or whatever? I've never known. Glencore to step aside, and they're the ones who started this. They're about 40%. You know, if it's going to be split, it's 40% Glencore, 60% Rio Tinto. So they must have a plan. And what's the other chap? Simon Trott. He's been there for a long time, but he's only been in the job as CEO for a few months. So it might fall down on that. These are all very great, and everybody says we can see what the benefits are going to be, but let's sit around the table and say, who's going to run this place? You know, so.
But it's interesting that when Teck and Anglo get together, and then these two that you've just been talking about get together as well, and I've asked you this question before, does consolidation in the industry mean that it's bullish for the raw material, the dollar-priced commodity?
I don't know. You know, we'll find out. we're going to find out whether or not there is benefit, because you're going to have to work out, well, where are the benefits going to come? I can understand if you've got two contiguous mines. In other words, a mine next to another one.
Yeah.
And you've both got to build railways, or you've both got to build plants, or you've both got to do things. You know, there I can see the benefits of a merger, where you say, we don't need two plants, we only need one. Let's merge. You know, that's where I see benefits coming through. If we can prove that that's there, if each is after the other's assets, and Rio, who are copper and iron ore or whatever they are, kind of say, well, we'll take the iron ore, you take this, you run that, I don't know. These are complicated deals. We're going to see the same thing with Anglo American as well, and Teck. You know, what really comes out of it, and you'll have to follow it over years. Listen, as we lost, you're good for Anglo American. You know, they sold out of Valterra in February. You know, great timing, which is platinum.
It's the wild west out there when it comes to commodities, David. And no one seems to know what's going to happen to the oil price. Venezuela has been brushed aside almost. I mean, it's got made it volatile.
Look at Iran now.
Yeah, Iran is an interesting one.
You know, initially, there's worries that the oil there won't be any flows out of Iran. I know it's a controlled flow, but what happens if Iran does fall and suddenly you've got a new nation that you want to build up? You know, it's going to be more oil on the floor. in the market as well. As,
I can't see,
as well as Venezuela.
I can't see anything but trouble if there is a regime change, a violent regime change in Iran. I mean, look at 1979 when the Shah was deposed. I mean, it was chaos, and now they want to go back to the. They want the Shah's son to come and sit there. It will be a complete disaster. There'll be a free fall. Well, everyone will want a chunk of it. Even Trump wants a chunk of Iran. He doesn't even know where Iran is. Remember that time he bombed them with the B-52
by mistake.
Yeah, he had those those very sleek bombers at night, and he said these are the most tremendous bombers. You know, we had a really strong reaction to Iran's nuclear program, and he said, and he said, and it was very dark that night. I remember him saying that, and I thought, this is $100 billion jet you've got there. It doesn't matter whether it's dark or raining; it's gonna find its target. Don't you worry about that.
they didn't have flashlights. Here we are, bombers.
That will be horrible.
It's a situation that's developed. We're only the second week into the new year, and I mean. Already you've had Venezuela, we're having Iran, we're having
Cuba.
Rio Tinto, Cuba's also the next one. Yeah. We've got Cal, we've got, only a few weeks in.
It's actually the 12th, it's not even 2 weeks in, it's the 12th of January. Weeks, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah,
it's extraordinary. David, the other thing, I was going to ask you if you could name all the countries that, never mind the ones that he says he's stopped fighting each other, the ones that he's had a go at. We've had Iran.
Yeah.
He bombed their nuclear facilities. There's been Venezuela. He invaded and took out the president and is putting him on trial. What else have we had? We've got threatening Greenland. Panama Canal's gone a bit quiet. He was going to do something with the Panama Canal, but he hasn't done anything that hasn't come up for a long, long time now. But Greenland is definitely next.
Didn't BlackRock or Black buy it back?
Black
didn't
something
they,
did, yeah. So they
from
did
the Chinese.
Yeah, something happened there.
Blackstone or BlackRock, I don't know which one it was. But
not BlackRock.
Blackstone, yeah.
Yeah, Blackstone. But they, he even went into Nigeria, David, because he wants, he said, I like Christians.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anyone told him that the Christians in Nigeria are black, because if he'd had found that out, he would definitely not have helped them, because he's a rabid racist, as you know. But anyway.
The Greenland one is bad. The Greenland one is next.
Yeah.
And that's worrying. And I mean, that's NATO. And I mean, his whole story about whether or not, he says they landed there 500 years ago and suddenly they lay claim to it. Well, I think there are a lot of other countries in history that have done exactly the same and are still there. So I don't know. It's got a very strange sense of history.
Yes, when he was asked about Denmark having, sovereignty over Greenland, because they were there 200 years ago with their boats and they claimed it as theirs. And he said, well, we were there with our boats as well. Or it was more than 200 years ago, as you say, 500 years ago. So America wasn't even invented 500 years ago. They didn't have any boats. What's he talking about? Nitwit.
Yeah, I know.
How's your tech stock portfolio? Not your portfolio. Let me see. The suite of tech stocks. They're sort of jostling position. One day I saw Intel down 9%, next day up 11%. Nvidia just treading water at the moment, isn't it?
I think there's going to be a period of digestion. I think the news is still positive. I'm quite positive on what's going. Have you seen ASML in the meantime? They're up about 20% this year alone. So you're finding it moving elsewhere. You've had good gains in Amazons and the Alphabets and so on relative to where we are in the first week and also in December. And Nvidia's gone kind of flat, but I still think it's going to be a theme that dominates, but I don't expect massive gains in the first half of the year. We need to get through a few earning cycles, and then, if they continue to grow, I think then the markets will respond in a way they should. So we're coming into the fourth quarter earnings season. I know that there's quite positive views on what companies will earn and what they'll look like. I think that's going to be another kind of underpin for the market. But with all the noise that we're hearing at the moment, you know, whether it's Trump, whether it's whatever it is, I still think markets are just brushing it aside and saying, okay, let's see what the companies are doing. You know, let's really get a feel for how they're operating and so on. I just see a headline coming through that Walmart's doing something with Gemini, whatever that means. So you're getting these tie-ups in the same way as we saw Jensen Huang doing a deal with Siemens. You know, you're now getting Walmart doing a deal with Gemini, which is, I think, who's that? Microsoft. I never know which one it is. Who's Gemini?
Alphabet, you're the tech man. Sorry, David.
I don't know. I use Copilot. So, and ChatGPT.
That's Microsoft.
So. But yeah. I mean, whatever it is, I think businesses beginning to adopt and introduce AI into a lot of businesses, which to me is the positive side.
Okay, so you're sticking with it. I don't know why I ask you. It's always the same, which is good. But what I'm saying is there's a lot of jostling between. It wasn't just biotech. It's now you've got to be selective because of the elevated levels of valuations. Yeah. That's my opinion. But you've got a good portfolio. That's good. And talking about good portfolios, I was watching LinkedIn the other day and up popped David Shapiro with the challenge, the 2026 challenge that you've got. Going the what's yes. it called the crystal tell me about it please the crystal,
crystal challenge.
Challenge
yeah you know we're finding sponsors. The story behind it in very simple terms is that during COVID I invited 10 people on Twitter, you know, it was Pitfall Yun and Julieta and so on, just to choose 5 stocks. So let's have an internal competition. Give me 5 stocks for the year and we'll measure it over a year. And whoever wins out of the 10 of us, I'll give you a bottle of Cristal champagne, you know, which is the top end of Louis Roederer. So anyway, 5 outsiders saw this. One which is Betsy Scarp, who was a musician, and she muscled her way in. And there were 15 of us and she won it, hands down. And it was great. So, but what happened, it captured the imagination of other people. Lindsay, it's a simple competition. Choose 5 stocks. That's it.
And can I do it as an overseas resident? Can I still enter?
Well, they've got to be South African. Yeah, of course, anybody. South African
stocks.
It
has to be South African stocks, but I can enter the competition, can I?
Yeah. It's a simple entry form on our website. There's nothing complicated. We don't need verification, what do you call it? You know, 2-leg verifications. Just give us a list. Tell us what you do. And so it's run that way. And it just grew from 15 of us in 2021, you know, to last year we had over 440.
Very nice.
Nearly 450. Yeah. And I can't believe how sensitive people are to what they choose. And but what it does do is, where it's a good exercise, Lindsay, is that we're talking now, okay? And we talk about South Africa. It's got to be confined to South African stocks. We don't allow ETFs or anything like that. Just give me, you know, 5 names. So, chaps, you know, you'll say to me, oh, I think banks are looking pretty cheap. I think the retailers are cheap. And we say that now at the end of the year, boy, you have no idea, you know, where they'll be. And I think that's the lesson.
And you can't change them. You pick the stocks. Choose that. You verify what the opening price was on what date is it? When does it start?
We start on the 1st of February. It's real return. I mean, it's total return. So we add in any benefits that you can get, like dividends and you know, if there's a rights issue or something like this, we'll adjust. There could be a takeover, whatever. You know, I adjust it. I use fact sets. I use their total return formula. And so once you've got the spreadsheet up, it runs. Now, the variations are incredible. I mean, if you think 5 stocks out of the whole stock market, you know, it leaves a lot of choices. But what happened is the chaps who won it last year, 3 different people, when I say different individual, they weren't connected in any way, chose 5 stocks, 5 gold stocks, and just and ran away with it, you know. So we had a fork out for 3 bottles of Cristal.
Louis Roederer Cristal. Yeah, very delicious.
It's paying at 6,000-7,000 a bottle, you know.
Not bad.
So that's all we do. You know, I mean, it's simple. We allow you to cash out one. You know, sometimes why we do that is sometimes either a share is falling, you say, okay, I've had enough, or alternatively it's running up too high, you say, I'm good out of here. And you can't reinvest it, you just take the cash.
Hmm.
You know, otherwise it becomes an administrative monster. Yes. And
Well, that's good fun. I'm going to go, where do I go
and
to?
And I'm the only one who can run it.
Of course you are. So what if you, I never say that. Assessmentsecurities, .co.za, or what? What's the website?
.com.
.com.
Yeah, assessmentsecurity.com. You'll find it on Crystal Challenge if you look it up there. But so we've got quite a big community. We're getting sponsored, and there's a certain magazine. I don't want to say this yet because they want to cover it, and we'll give them regular updates on how people are doing and so on. So for whatever reason, it's the simplest of competitions, but it does attract a lot of people. We get a lot of young people want to participate.
That's a good sign, though, isn't it?
Yeah, because they can, you know, they follow it, and also they can follow how badly professionals are doing. Just for the record book, I came about fourth or fifth last.
Congratulations.
Last year. And the irony is that my wife, Linda, chose Southern Palladium for a various reason, because my late brother was involved in a deal. He was acting as a lawyer for them. And she chose that, which was the best performing stock, even though she didn't come close to winning. It was the best performing stock. I chose Copper 360, which was the worst performing
stock. That was a dog. Mm.
Total dog.
Went to 20 rand a share, I seem to remember, shortly after listing. And what is it now, about 2 rand or something?
I don't know, whatever it is.
That sounds fun. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to do that. I'm in.
That's the fun thing about it. You know, you can't change your mind.
No, you can't. Okay.
And we make sure that we publish the lists all the time, so you know where you are.
Okay, David, we've done that. We've done tech, we've done Trump, we've done Powell, Jerome Powell. Let's talk briefly about football. There was no league matches over the weekend in the English Premiership. It was the FA Challenge Cup, as they call it, the world's oldest and greatest knockout competition. And it was quite fun. Arsenal won. The one that I liked, of course, was Macclesfield beating Crystal Palace. But even more enjoyable.
Remember, Crystal Palace won the cup last year.
Exactly, they're the holders. They're the first time since 1909 they've been knocked out by a non-league side. But the Man United Brighton game was the one that really got me going, because the crowd was so miserable at the end. I mean, I didn't feel sorry for them. It serves them right. But it was appalling how the mighty have fallen. Darren Fletcher in charge of a team worth 500 million quid.
I know. I really, you know, I like to see big names, and you like to see these companies doing well. I think if I look at Chelsea, if I look at Man United, and I look at Spurs, I mean, Spurs are abominable.
Mm.
You know, they also went out. The fans go there and they just scream and shout and abuse, and they're not even taking it in good humor like most companies, like, you know, most.
I think their senses of humor have run out by now, especially if you're a Spurs fan. I mean, the travesty that they're in the UEFA Champions League because they won that other silly little cup is remarkable. But there's three clubs, as you've rightly pointed out, Man United, Chelsea, and Spurs, which should be their leadership should be ashamed of themselves. Poor fans.
And you've got Sunderland making it. I mean, Sunderland playing great football, whatever. Whether they can sustain it or not, it's probably one season and then they're in trouble again, whatever it is. But still. The Spurs and the other clubs have got so much power and so much money and should be in a far better position. I don't know. There are lots of things lacking there.
Okay, David, I'm just going to spend my evening now, in between watching Liverpool against Barnsley, the last FA Cup third round game. I'm going to start picking some stocks. It's very interesting. You can't enter twice, can you? No.
No, well, you can enter into another name. We'd never know. You know, you've got a son and a daughter, whatever it is.
Of course,
we don't do deep checks, you know.
We'll make something up.
Take you at face value, yeah.
Okay, good. David, thank you very much for your time as always. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. And that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.